Let's open our Bibles to Ezra chapter number 5, where we're going to begin in verse number 6, reading the official letter sent by Tattenai, who is the Medo-Persian governor of the region south of the Euphrates River, which includes the Judea subprovince. He has been made aware, perhaps by the group that we're going to refer to as Samaritans, living north of Judea province. Somehow he's become aware that the Jewish people recently returned out of exile within the last 16 years, are rebuilding the temple of their God. And he is apparently not aware of any such authorization for a building project. So he goes there personally and asks them what's going on. And the Jewish response is apparently we're building the temple in compliance with a decree from Cyrus the Great. And Tattenai then proceeds to check on the veracity of this decree that they're claiming their building project is authorized by. And so here's the letter, Ezra chapter 5, verse 6. And by the way, this is all happening in the fall of 520 BC. This is a copy of the letter that Tattenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, and Shethar Bozenai, and his associates as governors who were in the province beyond the river, sent to Darius the king. They sent him a report in which was written as follows. And so this is probably a synopsis or a condensation, a smaller excerpt from the larger legal letter. To Darius the king, all peace. Be it known to the king that we went to the province of Judah, to the house of the great God, meaning he who is. It is being built with huge stones and timber is laid in the walls. This work goes on diligently and prospers in their hands. Then we asked those elders and spoke to them thus, who gave you a decree to build this house and to finish the structure? We also asked them their names for your information, that we may write down the names of their leaders. And so that's exactly what we saw in the historical account we looked at yesterday. This was their reply to us. We are servants of the God of heaven and earth. So that's a good Jewish response. And we are rebuilding the house that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and finished. And of course, that's Solomon. But our fathers, because our fathers had angered the God of heaven, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this house and carried away the people to Babylonia. And so here we have a historical event which is known in the Middle East. Nebuchadnezzar, the great king of the Babylonian Empire, had destroyed the temple building. That's in 587 BC by our calculations. And so that's about 68 years earlier. And he had emptied the land of people. He had taken the surviving Jewish peoples into exile. But these Jewish people make a point of saying that's because of our sin. It happened as a judgment from our God. Verse number 13. However, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Babylon, Cyrus the king made a decree that this house of God should be rebuilt. And so that's closer in history. That's only about 17 years ago now. And the gold and the silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple that was in Jerusalem and brought them into the temple of Babylon, these Cyrus the king took out of the temple of Babylon, and they were delivered to one whose name was Sheshbazzar, whom he had made governor. Now, what we're seeing here is the report of Tattenai that the Jewish people are functioning on a decree given to them by a previous king of Medo-Persia, that is Cyrus the Great, back in 537 BC. And this is the reason why they actually have the temple vessels that had been taken by Nebuchadnezzar, stored away in Babylon in one of the pagan temples there, but then put into the hands of this Sheshbazzar, which is just another name for Zerubbabel. Sheshbazzar is his Medo-Persian name. It's got something to do with the worshiper of fire, because the Medo-Persians had a religion that put great honor toward fire. So it's the fire of the gods. So Sheshbazzar was his name in Medo-Persian, but his other name, Zerubbabel, that's Hebrew, and it means sown in Babylon. And so that might be an indicator that Zerubbabel has been born since his parents were sent into exile. So just a potential. But he had been tapped by King Cyrus to be the new Jewish governor of the returnees. He was going to answer to Cyrus for the almost 50,000 Israelis that were returning with him. But continuing with the letter, and he said to him, take these vessels, go put them in the temple that is in Jerusalem, that is the temple you're about to build, and let the house of God be rebuilt on its site. Then this Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundations of the house of God that is in Jerusalem, and from that time until now, it has been in building and is not yet finished. So Tattenai's report is that these Jews are claiming that their leader, Sheshbazzar or Zerubbabel, has Cyrus's explicit direction to rebuild the temple of their god according to certain dimensions and to reestablish worship there at his expense, that is, at Cyrus's expense. And they have started the project but haven't finished it. So that's the report. Now is the request. Verse 17. Therefore, if it seems good to the king, let search be made in the royal archives there in Babylon to see whether a decree was issued by Cyrus the king for the rebuilding of this house of God in Jerusalem. So he's basically saying, I am not altogether certain that this is legit. I mean, anybody can make a document that looks legit. The question is it in the official archives? And so he's asking, could you please check and see if there is a record of this decree? And let the king send us his pleasure in this matter. Now, that's a secondary thing. He's not just simply saying, could you check the records and see if this is a legit decree? He's also saying, and what do you want me to do about them building the temple? Because you're in charge now. Cyrus might have given them permission, but that doesn't necessarily mean Darius wants them to have this permission. So that's the letter. Verse number 1 of chapter 6. Then Darius, the king, made a decree, and a search was made in Babylonia, in the house of the archives where the documents were stored. So this is all low-tech that's happening here. We live in a high-tech world, so this all would have been done digitally. But back at this time, it has to be done by hand. So King Darius orders his bureaucrats to make a physical search of all of the records related to Cyrus to see if he made such a decree that the temple at Jerusalem be rebuilt, and that he gave this responsibility to a man by the name of Sheshbazzar or Zerubbabel. So they go out, they fan out, and go to all of the different archive sites because some sites might have unique documents. Now, the Medes and the Persians tended to make their official documents clay tablets. While the clay was still wet and malleable, they would use their wedge-shaped writing named cuneiform on it, and then they would fire it in a kiln and it would be a permanent record. But sometimes they made scroll copies of these written records that could be kept elsewhere. And that's apparently what these guys find. Verse 2, in Ecbatana, the capital that is in the province of Media, a scroll was found on which this was written. So they may not have found the original, but they did find an official copy of that original document. So this is what it says, a record. And then comes the quote, in the first year of Cyrus the king. Now that probably indicates that this is a Jewish record, a Jewish officially generated record, because the Jews counted from 537 as Cyrus's first year, even though he had been king over the Medo-Persians longer than that. So in the first year of Cyrus the king, Cyrus the king issued a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be rebuilt, the place where sacrifices were offered, and let its foundations be retained. So let it be put on the exact same site where it was. Its height shall be 60 cubits, so that's basically 90 feet, and its breadth 90 cubits, or 60 cubits, or about 90 feet. So that tells us we're talking about the basic shrine building only. 60 cubits is not inclusive of a tower on the front. So it's not going to be the Solomonic temple. It's going to be a budget, scaled down version of it. The breadth, though, does tell us that this temple is going to include the wraparound storage facility, the three-story storage facility that wraps around the shrine building. So that's the shrine building itself, dimensions that Cyrus specified. And then verse 4, I don't think is about the building of the temple. I think this is about the courtyard around it, because it says, with three layers of great stones and one layer of timber. Now, here's my reasons for thinking it's probably not the temple building. Because if the temple building is 60 cubits tall, and you only use three layers of stone in it, that means each layer of stone's got to be 20 cubits tall. And while we have some pretty big stones used in the temple of Herod that we know about, none of them were that tall. So it's probably more than likely a reference to the defining courtyard wall, three layers tall, with a decorative topper of timber on the top of it. And we do know that there was some sort of courtyard around the Temple of Zerubbabel, which then was later expanded until finally Herod the Great expanded it the most, until we see now the footprint of the Temple Mount as defined by Herod the Great whenever we go there. All right, so next line, let the cost be paid from the royal treasury. So this is interesting because the decree originally included authorization for all of the rebuilding project to come out of government funds. Now, Zerubbabel and Joshua have been rebuilding this temple, apparently, out of Jewish resources that they brought with them. That's going to change because of this decree being found. Verse number 5, "And also let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that's in Jerusalem and brought to Babylon, be restored and brought back to the temple that is in Jerusalem, each to its place. You shall put them in the house of God." So that is authorization for Zerubbabel to actually have those gold and silver vessels that are in his custody. So this copy, this official documentation, verifies that what the Jewish people are doing is completely on the up and up. It is completely in compliance with what Cyrus gave them about 16, 17 years earlier. And that's what Darius acts upon. So here is now the letter sent back to Tattenai from the king Darius. Verse 6, "Now therefore Tattenai, governor of the province beyond the river, Shethar-Bozenai, and your associates, the governors who are in the province beyond the river, keep away." So back off, basically, in any attempt to interfere. "Let the work of this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site." So you need to back off, leave them alone. This is completely legit. This is completely authorized. Let them finish it. And then he puts a little more information in. Verse 8, "Moreover, I make a decree that regarding what you shall do for these elders of the Jews for the rebuilding of this house of God, the cost is to be paid to this men in full and without delay from the royal revenue, the tribute of the province from beyond the river." So once Darius saw that Cyrus had intended to foot the bill for the rebuilding of this temple and the reestablishment of the Jewish faith in their land, Darius decides, well, I'm going to do that too. But he tells Tattenai, "I want you to pay them out of your part of the revenues of the kingdom." So Tattenai is now responsible for being paymaster to this project. Verse number 9, "And whatever is needed, bulls, rams, or sheep for burnt offerings to the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, or oil, as the priests at Jerusalem require, let that be given to them day by day without fail, that they may offer pleasing sacrifices to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons." Now, it is not unusual for a polytheist, that is, someone who believes in multiple gods and goddesses, that when they come across a new god or goddess, to kind of fold them into their pantheon. And so it's not surprising at all that Darius figures, you know what? This might be an opportunity for me to get another god on my side. So I want you, Tattenai, to make sure that sacrifices are offered on my behalf by these Jewish people in their new temple. You pay for it. You make sure that they've got all the supplies necessary to do this. And that way, they can pray for me as their governor, that their God will back me up, that their God will guide me and direct me. So this is the reason why the Jewish people were quite consistent in their history of offering sacrifices on behalf of first the Babylonians, then the Medes and the Persians, then the Greeks, then the Romans. because they were in the custom of intercessing for anyone in government. Very interesting background to our New Testament requirement in Romans chapter 13, that we're supposed to be submitting to those who are in authority over us and even praying for them and trying to support them in their work for God. So that's what we see into the decree up to this point. There's only one other thing that Darius wants to put in here, and that is a warning to anyone that is going to interfere with this process. Verse 11, also, I make a decree that if anyone alters this edict, now that doesn't mean just physically altering the wording on it, but messes with the administration of the edict, that is, the building of their temple, a beam shall be pulled out of his house, and he shall be impaled on it, and his house shall be made a dunghill. Now, the process of crucifixion as an execution means has an evolution over time. In the ancient times, even in the writings of Moses, it was common practice that once a person was executed, for his body to be put on display as a warning to anyone engaging or thinking about engaging in the same behavior. So in the book Deuteronomy, there is this order that cursed is anyone who is hung upon a tree. And then also another order that that body was to be taken and buried before the sun went down. So the Jewish people did display dead bodies, but they did it only on the day of the execution. Now, in the Babylonian and the Medo-Persian areas, they would take the body and somehow affix it to an upright post for a longer period of time. So in this case, what was going to happen was they were going to take a piece of this guy's demolished house and stick his dead body up on top of it, impale it on it. You might even think about how some societies just cut the head off and put it on a pike, right, as a warning. So something similar to that. Now, eventually, though, somewhere along the line, someone decides, why kill them first? Why don't we just impale them on the stake alive or nail them to some sort of wooden contraption and let them be seen dying? And so that's how crucifixion eventually comes into existence, first through the Medo-Persians, then through the Greeks, then eventually to the Romans. All right, so here is the warning. Anyone that messes with the Jewish rebuilding project is going to be killed and their body displayed on a piece of their demolished house, and the site of their house is going to get turned into a garbage dump. And then this curse. May the God who has caused his name to dwell there, as in Jerusalem, overthrow any king or people who shall put out a hand to alter this or to destroy this house of God that is in Jerusalem. So he puts a curse on anyone that messes with this divine being's house. I, Darius, make a decree, let it be done with all diligence. And so, as you would expect, according to the words sent by Darius the king, Tattenai, the governor of the province beyond the river, Shethar-Bozenai, and their associates did with all diligence what Darius the king ordered. And then the elders of the Jews built and prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And then it talks about them finishing it, which we're not ready to do yet, because we've got some prophesying that's happening while all of this back and forth correspondence is happening. And in order to pick up on that, we need to go to Zechariah chapter 1 and introduce this other prophet at this point. So, book of Zechariah. Let me see if I can get there as well. Zechariah chapter 1 says, in the eighth month in the second year of Darius. So the eighth month started right around the end of October. So this prophecy comes sometime in late October or November. The word of he who is came to the prophet Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, son of Iddo, saying, he who is was very angry with your fathers. Therefore say to them, thus declares he who is of the hosts, return to me, says he who is of the hosts, and I will return to you, says he who is of the hosts. Do not be like your fathers, to whom the former prophets cried out, thus says he who is of the hosts, return from your evil ways and from your evil deeds. But they did not hear or pay attention to me, declares he who is. So Zechariah's prophecies, coming at this same time, starts with this idea of, you know your history. You know what resulted in the destruction of Jerusalem and the exile of the survivors of the Jewish people. It was the fact that your ancestors, your forefathers, your foremothers did not listen to the warnings of the prophets that they needed to repent of their sins and return back to God. Don't be like them. Verse 5, your fathers, where are they? The answer, of course, is they're all dead. And the prophets, do they live forever? No, they don't. They get replaced by other prophets. But my words and my statutes, which I commanded my servants, the prophets, did they not overtake your fathers? So didn't it all come to pass? And the answer is, yes, it did. So they repented and said, as he who is of the host proposed to deal with us for our ways and our deeds, so he's dealt with us. So the people of this time period, 520 BC, they repent and they get busy building.